To another episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast, where we are a podcast about movies. You can find us on Fandango.com, Movies.com. Our audio is hosted by Audio Boo, if you're listening to us over there. Hello. And of course, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, which I hope you do. Because we were just blowing it up over on iTunes. Blowing it up. Anyway, my name is Eric Davis. Of course, I am joined by my co-host, Sean O'Connell. And Sean, this is like the week where 2014 kind of comes out of the door and says, hello, I'm here. Everyone, bow down. I am here.
With no offense to Paranormal Activity.
No offense.
Your soft launch didn't necessarily make us embrace 2014.
No, but this is the official – I feel like this is the official launch of 2014. Not only did we have the Golden Globes on Sunday, not only do we have the Oscar nominations on Thursday, the Critics' Choice Awards on Thursday, the Sundance Film Festival opens on Thursday. We have four new wide releases hitting theaters this week, all different kinds of genres for whatever sort of movie fan that you are. And then we have – on top of all of this, all the studios are coming out to play. All the rumor mongers are coming out. And we have major Star Wars news. We have major Marvel news. We have DC news rumors that's kind of floating about. This is the week that's sort of saying, welcome to 2014. Here we go. And so I think we're going to start off. We're going to kind of touch on all that, I think,
today. But all of that needed to happen, though, because 2015 is going to be – the most monumental blockbuster summer of all time. And we've been teasing that. But for us to finally get to that point, Eric, we need to cast some of these major movies.
Yeah, big time.
And the studios are finally realizing that. They're waking up to this reality of, oh, gosh, we need actors in these roles.
We actually got to make these movies that we're promoting and that people are excited about.
You know, can give us a release date all you want. But if you want to reach that release date, you got to do something with it.
Yeah. And in terms of people that have to do something pretty soon, it's Star Wars. Star Wars Episode 7 is supposed to come out December of 2015. And what they've done now over the holidays is the original writer, Michael Arndt, has left the project. And now J.J. Abrams is with Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote The Empire Strikes Back. They are reworking the entire script, and the rumors about it are that they're flipping the script. The original script was about Luke, Leia, and Han's offspring, and they were going to be kind of front and center with a new story. And then Luke, Leia, and Han, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher were going to come back in a limited capacity to kind of pass the torch. But now, according to Entertainment Weekly and various sources, they're flipping that, where Luke, Leia, and Han are the primary stars of the film, and the story revolves around them, and their offspring are the secondary characters. Eventually, somewhere inside this film, they will say they will bid farewell to Luke, Leia, and Han, and their offspring, I guess, will take on this new challenge, whatever challenge, and that will go forth into the sequels. Sean, do you think this is a good idea?
I think it's a terrible idea.
Oh, Sean.
Because to me now, it feels like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Like, now it's going to be – this was a great opportunity to start fresh. And I'm not saying that Indiana Jones needed to or could have started fresh. When they announced that they were going to do another Indiana Jones, I was all on board. And then we saw it, and then I realized you can't do this anymore. Like, it's just the character – the time has passed the character by. And no offense to Harrison Ford, I love him and keep doing character stuff. You can't go back to those old roles. And listen –
I'm listening.
Father Time is always going to win this battle. And if you've seen Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford, you know, lately, God bless them, but they're not action heroes anymore.
They can't put out the kind of action sequences that audience expect these days. I mean, when you look at, say, Star Trek Into Darkness, and right, you look at Chris Pine and Benedict Cumberbatch flying like rockets through space.
Sure.
Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher aren't going to do that.
Well, that's a great example. Like, if you tried to do Star Trek, like if Abrams was like, I'm going to reboot Star Trek, but I'm going to give Shatner one last time in the chair, it would be comical. And that's what we're heading towards now. They're backtracking from the, we're going to completely reboot this franchise and start anew, and we're going to introduce you to new characters that you're really going to love as much as you loved Luke and Leia and Han. And we're going to keep them around for some familiarity, but we're going to start a whole new trilogy, and you're going to have spin-off movies, and it's going to be this whole thing. Now, again, it's like, oh, but well, let's give everybody who we loved one more shot. And yeah. Giving everyone we love one more shot, like I said, just feels like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull to me.
Yeah, it kind of does, you know. And I look at it and I try to say, okay, how do they make those three the central characters and deliver the kind of action that audiences expect with these three? I could see I see the Han Solo Chewbacca stuff inside the Millennium Falcon. I could still see that working. The two of them kind of griping at each other as they fly the ship. But I could still see you putting Harrison Ford in the pilot ship and still being able to deliver a decent action sequence. You know, I could imagine Han Solo still knows how to fly. And in that realm, I could see it. Mark Hamill kind of doing flips and swinging off Jabba's ship and kind of taking down guys with lightsabers. I mean, I don't know if I see it, you know.
Well, and what scares me even more is the script overhaul. You know, you hired an Oscar-winning screenwriter, you know, to give you a script, and you had to believe that they at least gave him the story that they wanted and the direction that they wanted it to go. And now you're being told that, you know, he's off the project. And it wasn't because of a timeline issue or anything. It's because they're going in a new direction. And again, this is where we run into the – you have a release date and you're racing to meet it, and now you're changing your story. It's switching horses midstream, and that's never advised.
No. The one thing I really like, though, about what they're doing is that they are hearkening back to the original trilogy and everything now moving forward that Disney does with Star Wars, including an animated show, Star Wars Rebels, that's going to premiere, I think, in the fall. That takes place between episode 3 and 4. And so it's going to be fun to see stories, not necessarily on the big screen, but to see stories and characters in other kind of, I guess, modes that harken back to that original trilogy. So that'll be after seeing so much focus on the prequels. Not only did the prequels come out, but then everything that came out around the prequels focused on the time period during the prequels, Anakin, and, you know, let your kids know Anakin more than they know Luke. And yeah. I like Disney switching that around now. So this way, the generation that comes up with these new sequels will probably know Luke, Leia, and Han more than they do Anakin and like that. So I do like that aspect of it. I think it's going to turn kids on to those stories versus the prequels. But I'm worried. You know, I'm worried in this race, this new Hollywood blockbuster era, where does a Star Wars sequel that includes Luke, Leia, and Han fit in? I'm worried about it. And I hope that they crack it. And I trust J.J. Abrams. I know he's a guy that grew up loving this property just as much as we did. We're around the same age. So I know he loves it. And he's a good filmmaker. So I'm just curious to see what happens. You know, in the meantime, we're seeing all kinds of rumors, casting rumors. I don't know if they have a script yet, but we're seeing Jesse Plemons from Breaking Bad is being eyed for a role. Michael Fassbender's name is coming up in talk. So it's interesting to see all these names, but we're still not getting.
But they're saying that a lot of the names you heard early are now out of the running because the characters they were going to play are not an emphasis anymore.
Yeah, which is
so interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting to see, and I'm curious to see how they do it. You know, with an emphasis on these three, how do you build action sequences around these Luke, Leia, and Han in 2015? That is my biggest question.
And we've said this too. I think you get one shot at this. Like, if you come out with something and it's not good, you're going to – the tide is going to turn almost instantly. I don't think Star Wars fans after the prequel trilogy they're not going to give you a lot of rope. Like, there's not like, all right, we'll wait to the next one and maybe they'll find their footing. No, you have to deliver now. And maybe that's too much pressure to put on Abrams and all of his people, but they're inviting that pressure. And that's the reality of it right now. You get one shot and it better kick ass.
Well, I mean, but let me ask you a question. Yeah. If it was all up to you and you could say, look, everything that Disney is doing is squashed. They're putting Star Wars aside. We're never going to see anything Star Wars again.
Right.
Or you could decide, you could choose between that and what they're doing now, would you still say, you know what? All of that said, I still want to see more Star Wars.
Yeah, you know what? I always want to see more Star Wars, of course. And here's the thing. It doesn't cost me anything. You know, if they want to try it, I'm willing to see what they're going to watch. And really, I'm just concerned for their long-term perspectives. But it's no skin off my rear end if they put out, 12 Star Wars movies or what. I just want a good story. And so, you know, maybe Abrams has something. Maybe he has a storyline that really does play to the older versions of these characters. And when we see it, we're going to be like, oh, man, he was right all along. That's the thing. Why'd they even entertain anything else? This was the right story to tell. And I hope that happens. I don't want them to abandon it now because it's going to give us something to talk about for the next 2 years. So, yeah, full throttle, go all the way. But it just feels on the outside looking in, knowing what we know, the little bit that we know, it doesn't sound promising.
It doesn't sound promising right now. It's a little worrisome. But moving on from a subject that's a little bit worrisome,
right,
to another Disney property that's killing it, really.
Yes.
Especially in their casting choices. We're going to talk about Marvel, which they released some pretty big news this week in terms of their Ant-Man movie, which is the movie that's coming out after the Avengers Age of Ultron. This is going to be the first movie of their Phase 3 initiative. And Ant-Man is an interesting character, Sean. And Michael Douglas was cast this week opposite Paul Rudd. Explain to people who don't know Ant-Man who Michael Douglas is playing and what this movie is about.
Well, this is a perfect counterpoint to Star Wars, because every time a new bit of information comes out, it solidifies the fact that Edgar Wright is making the right choices and moving in the right direction. Ant-Man is an old classic character, one of the founding members of the Avengers. He's been part of the Marvel Universe forever, but, you know, is a tough person to convert to the screen. And so that's probably why he wasn't part of the initial push for the Avengers the way someone as recognizable as Iron Man or Thor, Captain America, or even the Hulk would be. Hank Pym was the first Ant-Man. He's a scientist who came up with a way to shrink himself to insect size. He also used that ability to, at different points, expand his size. He played Goliath, and I think it was Gigantic Man, or some other version of it. And he wasn't the only Ant-Man. Over the course of the decades, other men took over the suit and used the technology to become Ant-Man. And so, you know, Wright was teasing fans by sharing images from a classic Ant-Man story called To Steal an Ant-Man, which was when a character who now we know is going to be played by Paul Rudd, in an act of desperation, really needed to, you know, earn some money because his daughter needed surgery. So he steals Ant-Man's suit and technology and is going to use it selfishly. But then he ends up, you know, changing gears and becoming a hero. So they cast Paul Rudd as Ant-Man, but didn't really say which one he was going to play. Now it turns out he's going to play Scott Lang, who's the guy who stole the Ant-Man suit, which means you needed a Hank Pym if you wanted to introduce him into that universe. But the problem is you needed an older Hank Pym. Well, here comes Michael Douglas now, and Marvel is saying that he's going to play the modern-day current Hank Pym who's going to work with Paul Rudd's Scott Lang character. Now, that suggests that you could have an earlier younger Hank Pym, but it would have to take place in like the 60s or 70s, depending on what the Marvel timeline is going to be, which is okay, because someone brought up the fact that with these Marvel one-shots, these short films that they're putting on, we've seen people like Peggy Carter still continuing her adventures from Captain America in an earlier time. So you might be able to fill in the gap somewhere where you have a younger Hank Pym who's coming up with the Ant-Man suit and the technology needed to shrink him down. And then you have Michael Douglas playing him in contemporary time, and he's interacting with Paul Rudd. It's a fascinating way that Marvel is just continuing to like throw out its tentacles and establish this far and wide but still very solid foundation on which they can tell all of these stories. They're doing it the right way.
They are doing it the right way. You know, and not just Michael Douglas, Robert Redford is going to be in Captain America: The Winter Soldier. They're really going after these iconic actors and kind of But plugging them into roles that make sense. Robert Redford isn't going to be jumping and flipping and doing somersaults in some crazy action sequence, but he's like a big head honcho at S.H.I.E.L.D. Michael Douglas, I do not see them doing, you know, all kinds of crazy action sequences. But even if they wanted to, you're inside of a suit. And everything after you're inside the suit is all special effects.
Sure.
So they could have Michael Douglas jumping around and leaping around and doing cool stuff.
Well, the best part is that superhero movie is not like a bad word anymore. You know, like if you were Dolph Lundgren Punisher era and you asked Michael Douglas or Robert Redford to do a superhero movie, you know, they'd look at you like you just passed gas. And now it's a place where you can plug into a franchise. These guys have grandkids, you know, that they want to look cool. Hey, look, I'm in the Ant-Man movie. Hey, I'm in Captain America. And they're amazing paychecks because you show up in one, you play a supporting part, and then you get royalties from here on out. So
it's a big deal. And Michael Douglas has kids who are around the age who would like to that kind of thing. So maybe that's why he's doing it. And one more rumor, Marvel. This is just a rumor. This isn't confirmed. But they want to do a Doctor Strange movie. And right. Johnny Depp is now being considered for Doctor Strange. And this is a rumor I really like. This is a role I would love to see Johnny Depp in. And I think it's a role he needs to play in order to kind of get some of that street cred back. And also, seeing the fact that his name is popping up as Doctor Strange means that is Doctor Strange going to be the movie that kind of where they go the Robert Downey Jr. route, where they try to find the next quote-unquote Robert Downey Jr., which is an older kind of well-known actor that kind of mixes in with all these young kids.
Well, and it also – this is the benefit of – think of the Marvel-Disney marriage too, because you now have access to someone like Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. And it just sounds – like they talked about Joseph Gordon-Levitt before him maybe taking the role. But once you hear Johnny Depp's name, now that's all I can think of. I think he'd be a great fit for it. And yeah, you're right. He's not opposed to franchises. He's been popping up in Pirates movies forever. He's probably potentially looking for the next sort of character role that he can step into and play for several years. Imagine if Marvel had like a lunchroom, you know, where everybody met in between takes. The amount of star power that you'd see under the Marvel umbrella now is just staggering to me. They're making great decisions. They're getting the right people for the roles. You hear Paul Rudd, you would never think of him in a superhero movie. But when you hear that he's Ant-Man for Edgar Wright, it just makes sense.
I'm so
happy for Marvel.
It makes sense, too, especially after Chris Pratt joined Guardians of the Galaxy. Now I kind of see where they're going in terms of their heroes. It's hard for me to imagine Paul Rudd as a cat burglar. So I'm curious to see him play. I've never seen him play something like that. Right. So that'll be interesting. You're exciting. They're keeping you excited. If you're somebody who's kind of – everything's building to the Avengers 2. Now we have something even bigger to look forward to after that. So I love how Marvel keeps doing that. When they build to a crescendo that you think, how are they going to move past that? You know, we thought about that with the Avengers. How are they going to now move past the Avengers? They keep upping the ante and they keep building and giving you things to anticipate. Really exciting. Doing really great things right now.
Actress. Don't you think they need an actress? They need to give one like a young up and coming actress a solid role that just establishes. It's a lot of guys. You know,
it is a lot of guys, but I do give them credit. When I talked to Kevin Feige during Thor, he pointed out that his females are in each film that they put out. The girls are doing more and more. And Captain America, the Winter Soldier, this is going to be Black Widow's biggest role to date. She's going to have a lot to do, Scarlett Johansson, in the new Captain America movie. So maybe they're not launching any female solo superhero movies yet, but with each movie, they're increasing the responsibilities of the supporting females that they have in those movies. Gwyneth Paltrow, Iron Man 3, Natalie Portman, Thor, The Dark World, and now Scarlett. So,
And Elizabeth Olsen is going to play Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
And could be a very major part of the Avengers for all we know.
Yeah, so I'm okay. And they're going to do a Netflix series they're going to have a female Marvel superhero is going to have their own Netflix series. So
okay.
I like all that right. too. But so we'll see. Now it's in DC's corner, and we're seeing some rumors about a possible Justice League filming back-to-back with Man of Steel 2, Dwayne Johnson in Justice League. There's all kinds of crazy, wacky rumors right now that I don't even want to address because I'm not even sure how much credibility is there. But hopefully, with all this Marvel Marvel news, now the ball is in DC's court, and they do need to make some moves. And for all we know, if they want to kind of get a little crazy with it, they'll let us see what Ben Affleck's going to look like as Batman. I think they need to do that.
But don't react.
Pretty quick.
You know, don't react to Marvel. Marvel's got a big lead on you, and to try and react just to fill in the gap, I think is the mistake. You know, don't force it. Don't jam. Like you saw an Aquaman rumor, you know, floating around. Let's not get crazy. Focus on Batman, Superman. Deliver a good movie, and you'll start to get your legs underneath.
I agree, and I think that kind of is what they're trying to do. I think if anything, the fans are trying to force the competition, the one-upmanship of it all.
We are
the fans are trying to force it in, but they are kind of doing what they're doing. So. Curious to see what they do. I'm curious to see how it turns out. But, Sean, we have four new movies arriving in theaters this weekend. People are going to look. They're going to say, what do I see? And there really literally is something for everyone. We have action movie, you go see Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. You want to see a horror movie, you go see Devil's Due. You want an animated movie for the kids, you go see The Nut Job. You want a comedy, you can go see Ride Along. So you have a little bit of everything for everyone. I think the biggest movie, though, this weekend, supposed to come out in December, pushed to this weekend, Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit. You've seen it.
I did.
Give us the lowdown. How is it compared to the Harrison Ford Jack Ryan movies? Is it a nice, proper reboot? Is this a movie? Chris Pine, God bless him, I love this kid. I saw him in Star Trek. I was like, oh, he's going to be a huge star. Hasn't been able to do anything outside of Star Trek. Is this a new franchise for Chris Pine?
Yeah, it definitely is. And Paramount is just going to have to be loyal to it and maybe give them a second effort, because there's a lot of building blocks laid down here. It is a perfectly acceptable, you know, January action movie. And I don't want to make that sound like a dig, because it's not. Because, I mean, you could have done this film and it would have felt like a train wreck and then we'd be slamming it. But it's not. It's good. It's, you know, it's better than adequate, and I even saying that, I hate saying that, because it's not a bad movie, but it really does feel like it's a franchise launcher, and it's not a launcher in the way that like Abrams' Star Trek, which also had Pine, you know, completely reboot the series. This is more just them saying, we need a younger Jack Ryan. We've got a young actor in our stable here at Paramount who we think is a good fit for it. And in a way, it's sort of introducing the character to a generation that probably has no idea, you know, who Alec Baldwin even is and never saw Hunt for Red October.
Are we looking at like a Bourne type movie? Do you get a Bourne feel with it?
Not at all. It's still very Jack Ryan has his intellect and he's a military veteran, but he's not this, you know, lethal ass kicker who you can drop in any sort of situation. And in fact, a lot is made out of that, in the fact that when he does have to get into some combat, he's not comfortable with it and has to use his smarts to sort of get around it. You know, if there's a beef with it, it's just the fact that they have a very stock villain. And he's played by Kenneth Branagh, who's also the director. And Branagh handles the character stuff of it really well. But the action stuff just ends up being a little bit loud and choppy. But it's okay, because, like, You can ride on the other things that are going really well for it. Kevin Costner has a role as the mentor. He has really good chemistry with Pine. They can keep him around for other stories, because you know, that's another part of the foundation, is I think I'd want to see more interaction between Pine and Costner. And there's plenty of stories that they can go into with the Tom Clancy library. This isn't based on any specific Clancy book. They just took all the characteristics of the Jack Ryan character and built a new story around it. And so I did the junket for it, and I was able to interview everybody tied to it. And when I asked them, you know, where they kind of wanted to see it go, they really wished that they had a crack at the Edward Snowden and how much it should be secret and how much should people be allowed to know about their government. So it seems like the wheels are already turning on like contemporary stories that they can plug this character into, because Jack Ryan was such a Cold War type of character. And since that doesn't exist anymore, they need to find new places to drop him. And I think that they'll be able to do that in other films.
Finish this sentence. For those who don't know Jack Ryan, never watched any of the Harrison Ford movies, Alec Baldwin movie. If you like this, you'll like Jack Ryan.
Oh, that's a really good question. If you like, this is going to change, scare people off, but if you like the Parallax View, and if you like All the President's Men, you're going to like Jack Ryan, because they are quick-moving but heady and smarter thrillers with a lot of international flavor to them. You're going to see Moscow. You're going to see London. You're going to see all these other international spots. Jack Ryan's a global character, and I think they're really trying to go after a global audience with this. So you have to be smarter. It's not born, and there's a lot of subtext to what's going on.
All right, so keep that in mind when you go see it. You're looking for a scare, you can go see Devil's Due. You're looking for an animated movie, you go see The Nut Job. Looking for a comedy, you go see Ride Along. And Ride Along is interesting. Looking at this, Ice Cube, right? Ice Cube.
Yes.
And Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart's blowing up. Kevin Hart's got like a million movies arriving this year. They're really kind of flocking to him.
Yep.
And I like it. You know what I like it about it? I like how it's a buddy cop comedy starring two black guys, you know, which we don't see. I feel like we're not seeing those as much as we should. And I'm happy that it's coming along. The premise is a little weird, but it kind of reminds me of The Hard Way. Did you ever see The Hard Way?
Yeah, sure.
With
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox, James Woods. I love that movie. And I love the fact, you know, Michael J. Fox. If you've never seen The Hard Way, you have to see it. I'm flabbergasted that they've never remade this movie because it's got such a great premise. Michael J. Fox plays this cocky actor who is training for a role to be a police officer. And he wants to go and basically ride along with a real cop to see what it's like. And James Woods just plays this grizzled, just he hates his life. He's, you know, borderline alcoholic. He fights with his wife, you know, grizzled cop, like the worst kind of cop, you know.
Right.
And Michael J. Fox is just this pompous actor who gets to go, and it's a buddy cop movie with the two of them. And this kind of reminds me of that. Kevin Hart is actually playing, I think, a guy that wants to marry, I think, Ice Cube's daughter.
His sister.
Yeah. And so he says, come ride along with me to see what you're made of.
Right.
So it's in the spirit of that. I would have liked it if Kevin Hart was an actor trying to be a cop. But well, I like Kevin Hart. I think he's funny. And I
find this interesting, too. They've already greenlit the sequel to this.
Really? I didn't even know that.
And I think that just means, like, I mean, if it bombs, obviously they won't do that. But I think they believe that these two have enough chemistry and there's enough potential here to get them together in another film. So
I like it. I like kind of Hollywood branching out more. And making these different kinds of movies.
Well, The Heat kind of showed this too, you know, that you can have girl buddy cops and put them through the ringer with a, you know, foul-mouthed R-rated comedy, and people are going to flock. That movie did gangbusters.
Yeah, yeah. So I could see Ride Along taking off this weekend. So we'll see. But other than that, Sean,
yes,
thank you for joining me. I am now heading to the Sundance Film Festival. You are heading to Los Angeles to the Critics' Choice Awards.
We're such important people.
We are. We're going off in these other directions. But we will meet back, I think, at some point next week, and we'll talk about the movies that are coming out next week, and I can give you a little report from Sundance to let you know the big movies that are arriving there, which I'm really excited to see. I mean, the last year, movies like The Spectacular Now and The Way Way Back and Fruitvale all came out of Sundance. This is I think the most important film festival in the country. And it definitely sets the stage for a lot of the independent movies that will be coming out in 2014. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's playing there. And Sean, before we go, you have a minute. Let us know what it's like to actually attend one of these award shows. And maybe we could talk about this next week after you attend the Critics' Choice Awards. But if you could describe it in 1 minute, what is it like?
It's eye-popping. The venue for the Critics' Choice Movie Awards I went last year is small, and so you're rubbing elbows quite literally with the cream of the crop. Everybody that you saw at the Golden Globes on Sunday is going to be in the room, and last year, just as an example, at the commercial breaks, everybody gets up from their table and runs to the bar really fast to get drinks before they have to be back for the televised event. So every time that we ran to the bar, we ran past the Silver Linings Playbook table, and it was like I had to move around De Niro every time to like get a drink, which was like, it just blew my mind. You have to just sort of go with the flow and realize you're surrounded by, like, hey, there's Steven Spielberg. Oh, there's Anne Hathaway. Excuse me, De Niro, I got to get to the bar. And, you know, you just pretend like you belong in the room and everything sort of goes okay. But my wife is coming and she's not prepared for that. So I expect to report on a major meltdown next week on the podcast.
A major meltdown from your wife who's just sitting at the table and seeing celebrity, celebrity, celebrity and just can't. can't handle that. No, I've had those moments. I've had those moments at Comic-Con where you walk into one of these rooms where they have all of these movies doing interviews, and you just stand around and you're like, oh my God, there's Michael Keaton and Samuel L. Jackson and Andrew Garfield, and what am I doing here?
You got to play it cool. The only way to do it is play it cool.
But when is the Critics' Choice Awards, and where can people see it?
They are Thursday night. They can be seen on the CW. I believe it's 8 o'clock Eastern time. Look for a pre-show in most markets. But the Broadcast Film Critics Association gives out the trophies for the Critics' Choice Movie Awards on Thursday night on the CW.
So. There you go. And look for Sean O'Connell and his starstruck wife sitting in the back corner somewhere.
In the audience. I've passed out.
Sean, thank you very much. Enjoy your trip to Los Angeles. And everyone out there, enjoy your weekend at the movies.